Well, we're here because we're not all there. Forgot my speaker.
Told you I was nervous.
You are. How would you like to be videotaped?
They will be.
You will be. Ah. You better look intelligent. Fortunately, we are all in the same boat this afternoon. Let's just be sure we're rowing together. I'd like to remind you of Titus 2. And the first part of it is, let the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, and in charity, and in patience. And then listen. Likewise, the aged, and brother, that's me. The aged woman likewise, women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers. And I go a step further, since I've become aged, do not accuse. Just don't accuse. Just, you know, in our table, Dawson did a great deal of training of all of us collectively. He did an awful lot personally. But he did a lot collectively. And one of the things collectively was, when you want to point your finger, and any time you do, just remember there's three pointing back at you. And then he went a step further and said, when you point your finger, just point it this way. It saves energy, and that's what we're supposed to be doing today anyway. So just automatically, but we don't do that, do we? We don't. And I'm just as guilty as I can be, and that's one thing I pray about every single solitary day, and that I wouldn't point my finger at you mentally. It's easy to do. Not false accusers, not given to much wine, and teachers of good things, that they may teach the younger women, excuse me, to be sober, to love their own husbands, to love their children, and be discreet. It's quite an order. Think about it. Chaste, keepers at home. Now, it doesn't say stay at home. There's a difference. And to our girls here on the Glen, when God leads and I have an opportunity, this is what I say to them. And I do to our younger wives. It doesn't say to be gone all the time. And it doesn't say that you can't be away some of the time. But the main thing it says is to be a keeper of your house. Do you, ladies, have you ever had a friend or know of a lady in your church? She's always there. In fact, she turns the key that opens the door to the church, and she turns the lights on. And she's the last one to leave, and she locks it up. And everything she does at the church is above reproach. And she's a tremendous testimony, but her home isn't. And she never gets a warm meal, or rarely ever. Because her priorities, she has them switched. And when she took her vow, it wasn't to the church. When we took our vow before God and these witnesses, it was to our husband before God. And if you haven't, you older women, if you haven't taken your vows lately with your husband, I would say do it. Do it in your own home, on your knees or sitting in a chair or whatever you want to do, or standing for a mirror, whatever you want to do, but do it. Review them often, because it's quite a solemn thing that we promised God and our beloved, at the altar that day. And as one of our wives, they've been married 40 years, and she was telling me just the 27th of June, she said, our marriage has been stormy at times. It hasn't been a bed of roses. But the thing that's held us together is a vow we took at the altar. This is one of our godly women. She said, is the promise that we made till death do us part. And I said, well, I know them real well. They're like brother and sister to me. I said, well, has it been endurance contest? She says, no, not that. But we have had some hard things. And it's helped in the making of this couple. And I'll get to that a little later. To love their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. And I often had a hard time over this portion in more ways than three, but one of them was, how could an aged woman help an older woman, help a younger woman to be all of this? How can I help? We have two daughters. How, when they were growing up, could I help them? How can I help them today? And I believe the only way I can is by example. So the Lord puts, and there's several of us in here with white hair, and the Lord puts on our shoulders, and you who are down the line a ways, to be an example to these younger girls that are here today. And it isn't in word only, and it isn't in deed only, but it's in our walk, and it's in our talk. And I often remind my children, you don't build a reputation in a year or in 5 years. And a complete reputation in 10 years, it's a lifetime. It's a lifetime of walking worthy of your calling before God. And dear girls, that's exactly what we must remember today. That you and I, as Christ ones and as women of God, are to walk worthy of our calling. So, what is your calling? You figure that out. Today I'm going to speak to you in the heart. Before that, I've been asked to do two things today, to share two things. And one of them is, to share with you that we had five children. We had four perfectly normal children, and then God, in His great, great wisdom and in His great plan for our lives, gave to us an invalid son, our fifth child. And I think in His plan for my life, this had to be. This is one of the huge stepping stones in my life. And it was, I have some stepping stones that got me ready for the time when Dawson left for the glory, for glory land, left for heaven. And one of them, of those stepping stones, was this invalid son. And I think that 46 years ago, or 47 now, if you had said to me, and it isn't that long, come to think of it, it's in the 30s, 38 years ago, if you had said to me, Lila, do you have the fruit of the Spirit in your life? I would have said, I think so. Well, it took this invalid son to show to this girl, this one right here, what was lacking and some of the great lacks in her life. And you and I hear the fruit of the Spirit quoted just like some of us have heard John 3:16 and still do when somebody quotes it. If you and I didn't know it, we would not understand all that was this person was trying to say when they were quoting that verse. And they quote it like this: for God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in Him should not perish. You know, and they're embarrassed to quote, and I don't know why. It might be it's the only verse, but my, that's the heart of the gospel. For God so loved that He gave. Why? That you and I could be like him. And enjoy him while we go home. It's as simple as that. And the fruit of the Spirit is found in Galatians 5, 22 and 23. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, short-suffering. Is it?
No.
What is it? Is it? It's long. Long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, and temperance. And Dawson Trotman said to me one day, I'd like you to take the word temperance and put the word balance in there. Balance. I was quiet. Very quiet in those years. And rather surprised. And so he said, but I'd like to remind you of a story that you and I were involved in. And this is the story. I'm always safest if I tell on me. So that's what I'm telling on today. One day he said to me, Lila, why is it you always say no to the children? And I said, oh, that's easy to answer, sweetheart. He says, it is. I said, Why? Because I don't want the responsibility that goes with saying yes. You think about it. Well, he had me thinking about it. So he said to me, like what? I said, well, like Ruthie wants to go on a hayride. And he says, well, what's wrong with going on a hayride? And I said, well, what's good about it? You know, there's so much happens. And Dawson proceeded to show me that I was, if God is my all-sufficiency, well, I'd limit him to nothing. And took it in my hands. And because someone else's daughter or someone else's girl or some child had gotten mixed up or done something, doesn't mean ours necessarily will have to go through that. Anyway, he just took me by the arm and gently played my elbow and he said, just try saying yes. So I did. And two years later, he said to me, sweetheart, why do you always say yes to the kids? Would you like to know what I thought but didn't say? Yeah, do you ever do that? Yeah. Well, I thought a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways, you know? Anything to get out of it, huh? Set me free, but I wasn't set free. I had to face it. So that's when Doss said, let's sit for a little moment. And he talked to me about balance. He said, in life, it's yes and no. Yes and no. No and yes. So start saying both. Just use balance in your life. And, of course, through the years, that word was used a lot in my life with other things. We have 9 blood grandchildren. And one through marriage. My granddaughter has been married 3 years. And all of the 10 are born again. The oldest is 26 and over 26 now. And the youngest are twin boys and they're 15 and a half. And they were saved 4 years ago up at our boys' camp. And they aren't growing. But that will be in the future. But the others are. And I have only the one married, and they are in various parts of North America. One's stationed in Hawaii in the Navy. One is in Golden, Colorado, going to the Colorado School of Mines. She's a 19-year-old granddaughter, and she's going to be a petroleum engineer. And if you think I haven't been stretched, you forget it. Or don't forget it. I can't possibly carry on a conversation with her. I couldn't before summer about petroleum anything. And now I don't know, but at least I've been studying. The grandchildren, it's a seminar with them sometimes. And just some of you know I have a daughter who is confined to her home. And this month is 19 years that she has been hourly moment by moment, never free of excruciating pain. Her spine is mushy, 11 discs are gone, or they're shot. Her bones started deteriorating in about 76, I believe it was, and now it looks like she's losing her eyesight. And we moved her here just the first day of June. They moved, she and her second son, who works on the ground crew. He's 22 and a half. And the last time he was at Glen Eyrie, he was 2 years old. And we've never made anything much of the Glen with our grandchildren, nor have we with individuals who lead it or who are in it, and so that they would come into this on their own and learn. And it's interesting how they learn. They like three of them came home one day and said to their mother, and I happened to be sitting by her bed, when they said, "You know we're famous?" And she said, "Well, sit down and tell me about it. I didn't know that." So it was interesting. Little kids, little tiny kids saying we're famous, you know. And she said, "The only one that's important is Jesus." And I loved it. Just took it clear out of their hands and didn't hurt them. You know, you have lots to learn and you'll learn as you get older. And I love it. And I love it, too, that we are all in the school of learning. We have the Lord took our invalid son when he's 14 after Dawson's death. He died. All but one of my children, all of them, are completely sold out to Jesus Christ, but one. She's 40 years old, and it's just a matter of time. She loves the Lord. She sings to him and about him. She reads the word occasionally. And she's a sweet person, but she's afraid that God will require of her what he's required of me. And he won't, because his gifts differ. And along with Galatians 5, 22 and 23, I'd like to share with you one of God's hate lists. Are you familiar with these hate lists in the Word? One of them is Proverbs 6, 16 and 17. Now these six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination. I'm interested, are you? What's the first thing on his hate list? Before adultery? Who said this of pride? Before adultery? Someone else. What's the very first thing on God's hate list? Haughty eyes? Someone else? What? Lying tongue? Would lying tongue be before murder? You know what the very first thing on his hate list is? A proud look. A proud look. And I think you all know that we were in servicemen's work, and we still are, but we only had servicemen in our home for years and years. And one day I walked in the room and Dawson had John Prince standing in front of a mirror. He was a sailor in uniform, and he had him standing in front of a mirror saying in the mirror, "John, what do you have to be proud of?" You know, just saying it over and over and over and over and over. And I stood over here in that part of the room, in a small house, just watching and listening and wondered what, I couldn't imagine what on earth. And yet I knew he had trouble with pride. This sailor did. Well, Dawson broke him. Or at least felt he did at the time. You try it 15 minutes to see how much you have to use your handkerchief. A proud look. Hands that shed innocent blood. There's your murder. Feet that be swift to mischief. A talebearer. Three of the seven things that God hates and are abomination, women, have to do with our tongue. And when I was young and a young Christian, I used to think, wonder why Jesus had to put three times into this that it was abomination to him, where my tongue was involved. If he'd have said it once, I would have gotten it. Oh, yeah. He said it three times. And I recall I had a wives Bible class when I was a young mother. And five times I got burned on the same subject. And all five subjects had to do with my tongue, talking, repeating a matter, or making one, or saying one of my own. I didn't get it when, if he'd have said it 12 times, all 12. And women, so often we put color to sin. Is a proud look any greater sin than adultery in God's eyes? Mm-mm. Or a murder? No. No. And yet, if you and I, as Christ ones, as Christians, if we aren't careful, we wrap our cloak a little bit tighter around us when we see a gal that, you know, she has a very obvious thing wrong with her. And so, you know. Don't we? Yes. And who are we? What in my life, in God's eyes, could be 100 times worse? Might be weight. Might be gluttony. You aren't kidding, it might. No kidding. Thou shalt have no other God. No other. None before you. And yet, our clothes can become our God. They can become more important than being on time. Or having time with the Lord, and in a daily encounter with the living God. Right? Our denomination. And I'm not hitting a church. And I'm not hitting the denomination. I'm just talking to you, sharing with you. Just some things I've had to learn. And the other thing that I've been asked to share was just a little bit of Dawson's homegoing, and that will be later if we get to that. I'm going to go right on. My message today is the heart. Psalms 57:7, if you want to jot that down. And if you're jotting down, just put Psalms 57:1 through 7. But we're only going to use this one verse in 57:7. And this is Psalms. My heart is fixed, O Lord. My heart is fixed. My heart is fixed, O Lord. My heart is fixed. And I put down this for me, and I'll share it with you. Lila, a fixed and an established heart produces stability in a life. And if we aren't careful, and you all will certainly identify with this, you and I can be saucered and blowed spiritually. We can be up in the morning, dressed to meet the Lord, and have time with Him in reading His words. And any time you hear me use stature today, that's speaking of the Word of God. And spend time in the Holy Word, having our daily encounter with the One who not only hears, but He answers. The phone rings and it changes our attitude. We look like God died and I didn't get the word, or you didn't, if it happened to me. We get a letter. We might get 7 letters and that one sends us. And we really do just look like all of a sudden God just walked off and left you, and He's more with you then than ever. Because He said, and He promised, I will never leave you and I'll never forsake you. I will never leave you. Put your name there. Doris, I will never leave you. I'll never forsake you. I never will. I go with you through it. I've been in homes when the phone rings and I can't repeat what I've heard in two of them. Many others, oh, the phone again. Which led me many years ago, and this was after Dawson's death, but to, I didn't know this before, and I hadn't really encountered it before, that I could remember. But I just dedicated my phone. And if God causes my phone to ring during my time with him, well, and then it's my opportunity to be gracious and just say, you know, I wouldn't have missed hearing your voice today, and may God bless you richly, because everything we have comes from him, his loving hand. Everything. But it's interesting how many weeks go by and it doesn't ring during my time alone with the Lord. Try it. It works. And then Psalms 101:2. Girls, listen. This is Psalms 101:2. I will walk within mine house with a perfect heart. Now, this is a promise God has made to you and to me. Lila, it's possible for you to walk in your house, regardless of what needs to be done or what hasn't been done, or anything else, with a perfect heart. And it's possible to do it. I will walk within mine house with a perfect heart. And I'm reemphasizing that because later on we're going to face another verse that goes with this. 1 Kings 8:58. That he may incline mine heart unto him to walk in all his ways. And keep his commandments, excuse me, and it says, and his stature, and I say, and his word. I'm to walk in all of his ways and to keep his statutes. And I'd like to remind you this, maybe you know this, but God cannot say no to a promise he's made. He can't. He cannot. Not to a promise. And you and I, as his children, can hold him to it. Just say, Lord, this is what you said, and I believe it, and so I'm accepting it as mine for this hour or this need or this day or whatever. Because circumstances do change our day. But I will not let a circumstance change my life. Be it death, be it sickness, be it an accident, and I just received a phone call that one of the twins was in a motorcycle accident and had 9 stitches on the back of his lap. But you see, God remains the same. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And if I'm to be Christ-like, that's what I'm supposed to be like. Oh, I can sympathize, and I can weep, and I can certainly, surely comfort my daughter, or my son-in-law, if he needs it. Or the grandchild, and not change anything inside other than, you know, take Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to cry, a time to dance, a time to rejoice. It's timing. And just because I look sad, just because over someone dying or somebody going through hard things, and I face those often, doesn't mean that I've changed or that he has. It's just that we're to rejoice and we're to feel sad and be sad with those that are going through. And instead of walking into a home and wishing you had what they have, just according to Ecclesiastes, I'm to rejoice with them over what God has permitted them, if they aren't Christians, over what they've earned and purchased and are enjoying. So if you have trouble with envy today, or wanting, let's turn those around. Get rid of them, you know. Flee from them, as it were, you know. Then it's possible. Proverbs 4:23. Anyone know it? Proverbs 4:23. No one?
Watch over your heart.
Absolutely. What?
Watch over your heart.
How does it start? Above all. Do you know how it starts? Oh, but you've got the point. Say it, dear. Is you that just that much you know or remember? All right. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead. I'm sorry. It's exactly. That's the heart of it. Excuse me, please. Sorry. Proverbs 4:23. Above all, that your God watch over your hearts. Above all. For out of it are the issues of life. And would you say it again? Because I like it. Flow the springs of life. Oh. Thrilling, isn't it? So let's take a dip and let's wash ourselves clean. For out of it are the issues of life. Come on, it's marvelous. Ezra 7:10. Now someone must know Ezra 7:10. I'll give you a hint. Ezra prepared his heart. His heart? To what? Now, will you say a little louder, because that's exactly right. Say the address.
Ezra 7:10. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgment.
To teach it. Say it, Ezra. Excuse me. That's exactly right. See, Ezra prepared his heart to what?
To seek the law.
Of the Lord.
And to do it.
Oh, I love it. He sought, and then he did it. And if I ever been in school along this line, because I live in a car and I travel, and you talk about a life being exercised. Before Doss died, we were riding along one day, and he says to me, sweetheart, why do you... talk to different ones that we pass or they pass or one way or the other. Well, I said, the lame brain just turned right and smack dab in front of me. And he said, he can't hear you. He can't hear you. As if I needed to be reminded. Of course I knew he couldn't hear me. I wouldn't have said it if he could hear me. I said, I thought this to myself, you know. And so Dawson said, do you think he can hear you? And I said, no. He says, do you know who does? So it was more important for you to keep in mind that the man or woman or person couldn't hear you, but you weren't the least bit thinking about the Lord hearing you. And that's idle talk. Well, I recall later when Dawson was at the wheel and it happened to him. And I didn't remind him either. But he told me later that what I didn't say spoke louder than I did. He felt like a heel, he said. And I said, well, don't we all when we do something? Psalms 27:14. Wait. Oh, I love this. Put your name in there. I love to make the word personal. Lila, wait on the Lord and be of good courage. You ever need encouragement? Well, just wait on the Lord. He'll encourage your heart. If there's nothing wrong with talking to another either. And he will strengthen your heart. See, wait on the Lord. Be of good courage. He will strengthen your heart. And then it says, wait. And I often think of the different ways that we're to be patient in the Word. And one of the hardest is to wait patiently. Have you ever stood in a corner waiting for someone to come and an hour's gone by and you're tired? You know, we are anything but patient, huh? And as a woman thinketh in her heart, everybody, so is she. Right. So am I. As I think in my heart. And that's why I made the statement in the beginning. We can think instead of saying it verbally, and it's just can be just as treacherous. Because out of the mouth pour out our thoughts, our heart speaketh, good or bad. So wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and He will strengthen your heart. Wait. Daniel 1:8. Daniel purposed, I love this, he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. I'd like to give you an assignment if you have never thought about this verse. What does defilement mean? And what? Look up the word purpose and see how many times in the word it's used. You're in for a very wonderful study, by the way. Do you ever do word study in your Bible class? I cut my spiritual teeth on word subjects, word Bible studies. And I was led to the Lord by Dawson. He was 21 years old and I was 13. And Dawson said, asked me if I was a sinner, and I said, no. Here I'm 13. And he got up and came over and shook my hand and said I was the first one he'd ever met. And I said to him, what is a sinner? And he said, well, have you ever taken a pencil, say? I said, yes, I have. And he said, well, you're a sinner. I said, I am. Mm-hmm. Any proof in the word that I was born in sin, I was a sinner. But I accepted the Lord alone. And reminding the Lord that Mr. Trotman, see, he was a senior in the school I was in when I was in the third grade. So I had known him since the third grade, and I was scared of him. And as a child, never ever after Energy's life, I never was afraid of him. Others were, but not me. I just wasn't. Maybe I was too dumb, but I wasn't anyway. But see, God had a plan for our lives, and. And if you forget other things today, just remember that God has a plan for your life. And the older ones perhaps know what their plan is. There's two women in this. I don't know that the other one is here. I don't see her, but one is here who's 3 weeks a widow, and the other was 7 months nearly when I first saw her. And it might have been last week she was here. I might have my weeks. Was it last week? Yes. Thank you, Polly. And you know, it's their privilege to find out what God has, if they don't already know, what the plan is as a widow. Because you're in a different school. You're in a different classroom. You really are. And I'd like to remind you that God keeps a costly school. Amen. Really does. Many of His lessons are spelled out through tears. Heartache. Really. He keeps a costly school. And a widow, it's a different ball game. And I have been 25 years, as of June the 18th, a widow. 18 years single. And nearly 24 years married. 29 years in Dawson's life. We went together 5 years. Started going together 2 months before I was 14. And do you think that our daughters didn't give us a bad time? They were definitely going to date when they were 13. Yeah. And they did. But they didn't go any further for a long while and just have that date, you know. I mean, further in dating. Daniel 1:8 says, now here, I just don't want you to forget. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And in Psalms 112:7, ah, he shall not be afraid of evil tidings. Why? Oh, his heart is fixed. A fixed heart. Remember, we shared that a while ago? Trusting in the Lord. And when I found myself alone, without the one I loved the most, this side of glory, I made, in September, he died in June, and by September I had made some new commitments to the Lord for my future and for our children and as a mother. And I was just a new grandmother when Dawson died. Our first grandchild was 6 weeks old when Dawson went home. And we were looking forward to having the children raised so I could travel with him, and feeling that my responsibility was over. And I was sitting right up here on the side of the hill, right here on the property, in September, when I opened a Bible that I hadn't opened for one of my Bibles. I hadn't opened for a long time. And I just opened it just like this. And here's Dawson's handwriting. And he says, "Sweetheart, when you read this, you perhaps will be alone." And he put there, "knowing you." Alone with God, I'm sure is what he meant. And he said, "You and I look forward to having the children raised and traveling," because I didn't travel with Dawson. Well, it was a rare thing if I was seen in public with Dawson, because we had never had less than 12 live with us, and for 4 years we had 30. And we had, during that 30, Lauren and Lucille lived with us, who he now runs our work, and you've been hearing him nightly, and he and Lucille moved back in with us with three children, so they were part of that 30. So we had eight children in our home, and all of them rather young, and our invalid son was one of those. And I'd like to just cut you in a little bit, since you've heard Lauren and you realize what a humble, sweet, dear man he is and how godly he is. But he and Lucy, when we found out that our baby was going to be placed in a state institution, and we had spent 6 weeks, you go to court your first day, you take your loved one with you, and then the last day of the 6 weeks, you have to take your loved one back with you when the judge tells you what you will be paying the government and for the care. And Lauren and Lucy came to us and said that they wanted to take over whatever the expenses were as long as Chucky lived. And they did, every month. And Dawson died in 56, and our young boy died in January of 59. So he was placed when he was 8 years and 4 months, I believe it was, and he was 14 when he died, so that's how long Lauren and Lucy took. That was over 6 years. And that's no small thing in my books, you know. Here they were, young parents, and I think you all know they have six children and miscarried one. They're wonderful people, and Lucy's just like a sister to me. Psalms, we already said that one. Second Chronicles, now we're winding down here. And these are the three or four portions that if you forget everything else, don't forget these. Because if I would live this one verse, I would know total victory all the time. And this is on my daily prayer list every day. 1 Kings 8:61. "Let your heart therefore be perfect before the Lord thy God. Know his statutes and obey his commandments." It says, "and keep his commandments." In essence, he's saying, "Lila, get your heart right, know the book, and obey it." Isn't that simple? Remember when, as you're raising your children, or when you did, the one thing we wanted was obedience? And Dawson lined ours up. They were like stair step the first four. And he'd say, "Bruce, what does Dad want you to do now this week? Just this 1 week. Just all Dad wants you to do, just for 1 week. Obey you. Ruthie, what does Daddy want you to do, dear, all this week? Only one thing." And she says, "Obey you." And Burke, the big clumsy one, you know, the one that's a huge, he's 6'3 or something. He grew to be. He's saying, do what you say. And then here's little Faith way down here. She says, do what you need. But do you think we were happy parents? And in the week that they obeyed to the letter, all week, every one of them, they didn't get past 10 minutes. Now, when Dawson said that to him, he knew they wouldn't. You know, he's a character anyway. And was funny as a crutch. And the kids use it today. And they used it with their children, you know. Get your heart right, women. Put your name there. Get your heart right before God. Know the book. Know what it says. You can't obey a commandment unless you know it. Or just take 1 and 2 Corinthians. It's just full. Proverbs is just full of what you and I should be, which we should be, and what we should be doing. Proverbs is the best book I know on raising your children, by the way. I don't know any better book. And we never allowed in our home a book written by someone who'd never had a child. Mostly men. And they weren't fathers. We didn't allow that. What did they know about raising children? What did they know about carrying a baby for 9 months? What do they know about morning sickness? And they weren't married. And they aren't today, some of them. You know? And you know, when you get a baby book, everybody's baby's different. You want to know why? Because it has your nature and your husband's. And they're the only two in the world like that. Nobody else. Nobody in the world's like Dawson and Lila. Nobody. And we have four grown children, and they have children. And they're grown. Now, you see grandma's nose and grandpa's eyes and mother's this, but they are uniquely themselves. God had a plan when he created you. And as I look at you, he's feeling real good. You're a sight for sore eyes. Now, listen. Having said everything today, I'll remember this. Oh, I could wish when I was the age of some of you younger ones that I had known this one verse. Acts 20:24. Lila, and this is one of the last things Dawson said to me. Lila, let none of these things move you. He had just talked to me about being a servant, not a follower, not a leader, but a servant. I don't care how old they are. I don't care what denomination. I don't care. Just serve. You don't have to marry them. You don't have to join them. Just serve. And he said to me, I don't think I have to speak to you about your heart, but keep it right. I don't care what they say, what they do, if they never thank you, you just serve. Not easy, is it, when you aren't thanked? You like that? We all face it, though. But what do we do if we're normal human beings? We talk about it. But you know what we don't do? We don't talk to the person that we're criticizing or talking about. Right? So along with Acts 20:24, learn to keep short accounts with each other, with your husband, with your children, with your grocer, I don't care who, your pastor. Just keep short accounts with yourself, with God, and with your husband, and with your children. But keep short accounts. That's why I believe that I was given a 100% victory when God took Doss home. Because we had learned years and years and years before to keep short accounts with each other. I meet widows often, most all the time, who wish Frank or Carl could come back so they could talk this out with them or this over with them. And it doesn't have anything to do with their property or with their assets. It has to do with between the words. Just words. Criticizing. Hitting each other. Don't you know couples like that just hit each other? You know, he couldn't say anything right if he tried. So he doesn't try anymore. Why? Because she's always, she can say it better than he can and faster. I have tried so much, and I'm still trying with some of my friends. I'll just use fictitious names now. You know, Helen, I asked Richard that question, you know, wink and smile at her, but she answers again.
And I just, thanks a lot for answering, Helen. She said, oh, I gotta get it. I said, And then I've seen vice versa, where the husband won't allow the wife, or he doesn't, at least. She can't say anything. Right. Let none of these things move you, and neither count your life dear unto yourself. Why? That you might finish your course with joy. What is my course? It's proclaiming, it's right there in Acts 20:24, proclaiming the name of the living God. Giving the plan of salvation, leading others to Christ. And one of the last things Dawson said to me was, stay on course. Just stay on course. It's going to look green across the way. It's going to look greener over this way. You know, the house is going to seem to this. The room's going to seem to this. Just stay on, keep on course. And get your directions from the one who made you, and we'll get to that. And we're getting to it right now. Isaiah 43:1. Now saith the Lord unto you who formed you. All of a sudden it's left me. Excuse me. But now thus saith the Lord unto you that created you, and he that formed you, fear not, for I have redeemed you. Isaiah 43. I've called you by your name. This is God. He made you. He formed you. He redeemed you. And he called you by your name. He knows you. And he says, right here, thou art mine. And in the heart of that verse, he says, fear not. Don't be afraid. I made you. I know all about you. And the second, when you go through the water, now that's the waters of life. Some of the waves are big sometimes, aren't they? All consuming, seems like. And the storm just doesn't give up in our lives. The storms of life. And God has privileged me to go through a few. I've had a desert experience since Dawson's death, and I've had a back of the desert experience. I like the results, but I didn't like going through them. And I certainly wouldn't ask God to send me through a backside again. But if he does, I'll gladly do it, hand in hand. And then there's fires in our lives, and some of them are awfully hot. It's a furnace experience, really. Just exactly like opening an oven door on a very hot day and have that flame just... And so all of a sudden, so often we have no way to plan for it or prepare for it, except we do through the Word. And because so much has happened in my life, I began finally, this lame brain of mine finally thought through on, why don't I prepare myself for the unexpected from just spending time and more time with the Lord? It takes time, women, to have a daily encounter with a living God that's meaningful for your life. And I know that you go through stages. I know when you're young and you're having your children, you know, one after the other. I know that you can't have the time then that I have today. I know that. But just always take the time, and you have to make time. And I have lived long enough to realize that you and I, and especially this one, I take time to do what I want to do, and I make time for it, right? We're all familiar with that. I want to be sure it's God's time. And the right timing in my life. And that it's his will. And then in closing of my message, I'd like to give you Isaiah 54:17. And girls, listen. This is so important along with Acts 20:24. No weapon Today especially, we're having rapes, thefts, just in Colorado Springs alone, cars being stolen, locked cars. If God doesn't take care of us, we're not going to be taken care of. And he gave us some gray matter and he expects us to use it. And I see often, I just want to go over and tell her so badly, honey, don't leave your car unattended. Lock it. Lock it. And have you ever planted yourself so you can see her when she comes back and she doesn't look in the back seat, on the floor? We had a girl waylaid that way and killed out here several years ago. Not one of ours, but I mean a girl in town. No weapon that's formed against you shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against you in judgment, God will condemn. This is the heritage, it says, in the 54th chapter in the 17th verse of Isaiah. This is the heritage of a child of God. Why should I go down to the count of tens because somebody's talking about me? And I just received a call from a woman that it's been 3 months, that I know real well and that I'm close to. And I have not seen her. I had not seen her for a long time. And she says to me, Lila, I think that you are seeing your children entirely too much. True. Like that, you know, to me. And she said, I was quiet. She said, are you there? And I said, yeah. And she said, well, aren't you going to say anything? I said, no. She said, why? I said, well, you just made a statement. You didn't ask a question. You just made a statement. I've seen my children far too much. Like that. And so I said, I have nothing to say. And she said, well, don't you think you are? And I said, well, now, this is rather an insult to my intelligence, I said, because... don't you think that I'm obeying the voice of God? Do you think I'm getting in my car and driving to Northern California for my help? You know, or because I particularly just like driving to California for my help, you know? I'm in obedience. And sometimes I'm turned around. I'm going in this direction and God turns me around and says, this is where I want you to go. And so I said, since you made the statement, then it's your problem, not mine. Well, she's been to me now 3 times, and she's been to my home, and all 3 times it's the same subject. She just absolutely was meddling, she said. And I said, and you were. You know, you were, dear. You're meddling. Years ago, our oldest daughter was... she had graduated from high school and she, it was 56 and she was married in, Dawson died in June and she married in December. In fact, they were engaged the night that Dawson drowned in the very waters where his body was still because he was there almost three days before he was found. And we gave her, for graduation from high school in June of that year, I'd given her luggage. I'm saying it wrong. We'd given her luggage for her wedding. Let's stay with the wedding. And a very wonderful, wonderful wife in our work, and one I'm very, very close to and always have been, came one day to see me and felt that I was spending too much money on Ruthie for her wedding. And I said, well, now, since you calling her by name, and I said, now, since you said this to me, then I'd like you to just tell me what those things are. So I listened. And I only heard her say one thing. Mrs. Kerr of the Kerr Jars that we can with, some of you older women will remember, there's a ball and a mason and there's also the Kerr, and she... was like a mother to me, and she gave money for Ruthie's wedding dress and her veil. You know, I could just go on and on. Well, this wife didn't know this. And so she thought I would have still bought it. You know, my daughter has to have a wedding dress and a veil. And while, listen, this has been a lifelong lesson to me. While she was talking to me, a fella came up in our presence and handed her an envelope. And she made the mistake of opening it in my presence. You know what it was? $175 for her to buy some clothes with for herself. And I thought, oh, Lord, you just timed that right. And I went right back to Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time to rejoice. There's a time to be sad. And I say there's a time to be corrected. There is. There's a time to be talked to. There's a time, also it says in Ecclesiastes this, to be quiet. That wife to this day says, I never told her Ecclesiastes 3, but she quotes it now and says, and what the word of God said to me is, just keep your place. Just stop meddling. And that's exactly what she was doing. She was meddling. She was meddling in my life. You know, why didn't she say this to me? This is the right approach. Lila, what have you gotten Ruthie for her wedding as the way of gifts? And I would have only said one thing, and that's white lugging. It's the only thing I've gotten her. And yet the room was filled with gifts. And she had her clothes and her going away outfit and all this, you know. And it was totally out of my hands. I went to help pick it out, but there was gifts to her. So he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, what does it say? It is a folly and a shame to them. And we're all guilty of this. And when you become a mother-in-law, and then you become a grandmother on top of that, you know all the answers, you know. You've been through it, you know. You could say, well, I'm just going to warn her. You know, they don't have to make that mistake. Yes, they do have to make that mistake. If it isn't life and death, let them make it. Costly? Yes, it's going to cost. But it's a lot better for them to have paid the extra than it is to hear mother or mother-in-law. You know, she knows it all. You know, just don't know it all. And rejoice with them, even in their mistakes, really. And don't be so quick to say, I told you so. You know, it's such a temptation, isn't it? And I've learned this too, if you would like this for your future years, that I don't stay long with my children because I want to be invited back. You know, you're going to leave already? Well, I've been here, well, goodness. Oh, please stay. You know, I'll come back. I'll be back, you know. Now, what time's dinner or breakfast or anything? What time are we supposed to be through? Who's in charge? About 3. All righty, let me tell you this. This is the other thing I was asked to share with you. And, of course, in just 7 minutes, I can't tell you the whole story. But perhaps some of you know that God spoke to me in a very definite way on Father's Day, which was the 17th day of June. I was in Upper State New York, where Dawson was, and our oldest daughter, who I told you became engaged the night that he drowned. And her husband was in charge of this. Her fiancé was in charge of this conference, ours. It was our very first East Coast Navigator Conference. And at that time, there were about 250. The reason I say that is because as soon as they got word of his death, and they started pouring in. But at the time of his death, there were about 250. And on Sunday, I had had time alone with the Lord down by the water. And in fact, the very water where he drowned. Later, and it was, I had told the Lord, I'd closed the word, and had 2 hours with him, and I said, you know, Lord, today's a special day, and it's Father's Day, and all the children have remembered their dad with cards and gifts, and I certainly have, but I want something special from your heart to mine. And as I sat there, I thought, well, I just don't know where to, I just went like this. I don't know where to turn in the word. So I just turned in the word, just turned in. It was 2 Kings, the second chapter, And so I just read it. And that second king, the second chapter, has to do with Elisha and Elijah when the mantle was handed down from one to the other. And when I first read it, these words came to me. Lila, I'm going to take Dawson from you. I'm going to call him home. I'm homesick for him, and you've had him now a few years, and I know this is the right thing, you know, to do. And so I didn't like what I came to me, and so I closed the Bible and sat there. And at the time, I thought I did a dumb thing, but I have lived long enough now to realize that it was God's plan for my life, and certainly has helped others now, since, I mean. I counted the cost of what, by that I mean what I have. I wasn't all that the Lord had wanted me to be as a wife, as far as the Word of God. Dawson told it differently than I did, but I lived with me and I knew me real well. And he lived with me and he knew me real well, but he didn't know my inner thoughts or my heart. And I don't know my heart. I don't know it today, but God does, and so I depend on Him. But, I thought, well, since I didn't like what I read, you know, have you ever done it? I'm going to open the Bible here. Look down at 2 Kings, the second chapter. So I read it again. And the 10th verse of the second, in part, says this, of that same chapter. It says, you know, Lord, you've asked a very hard thing of me. And I said to the Lord, you know, I haven't done it with him 100%, and how on earth can I do it without him? And so I was reminded that if I just put my hand in his hand, there'd be no difference. You know, he could become my husband, and he has. Become my lover, he certainly has. My guide, my shield, my protector, he's my everything. He's as near and as close to me as my breath, so you take my breath away and I'll go to be with him. But anyway, that was Sunday. And we, after he spoke that night, and he spoke on, you know, the rod that Moses had in his hand, and the scripture says, what is that in thine hand? Well, Dawson likened it to television, to your denomination, to some of the things I shared with you today, just in a word or two. And after that meeting, we had a date, and we went about 50 miles for dinner. And I don't know why. I've been toying with it all afternoon, afraid to share it because I was afraid that it was a holier than thou. Dawson's much stronger than I spiritually, and we were very, very close. We were one, completely one, and we our vision was, when I say the same, I'm not in any way trying to put myself in his, you know, over his shoes. I was not what he was, but as a helpmate, that's where I felt that I had not been everything that the Lord wanted me to be was. You know, so often women, when you are with girls and women, and helpmate seems to be spelt M-E-A-T. Butchering. I've been in public places where I have heard a conversation from one place to the other, one wife to another wife, on the most intimate things you can possibly imagine. Nobody's business but the wife and the husband and God's, unless you go for help. That's ill. And from Billy Graham, I learned not to be a revealer, but a protector. He protects. He never reveals. Never. Never. I was on the team. I know. I had that privilege. And Dawson was when he died. From Ruth Graham, and one day I was in her home, and she said, you know, I've learned to pray on the hoof. A hoof. I said, what do you mean, Ruth? And she said, well, when I'm changing dirty diapers, when I'm ironing, when I'm walking the floor at night, maybe all night, I pray. I pray on the hoof. I leave a Bible open, she said, on the kitchen table, and I've been there several times, and it's always open. And she says, I get 7 to 9 minutes more because that's open than I would have otherwise. Because the children take all my time. So I've learned some valuable things from her. Another, as I'm waking, she says, no, I wouldn't have missed your voice. Anyway, Ruth, I said, well, it's in the paper. She says, goody. I said, all right, what did you have in mind when you answered him? She said, oh, well, it was necessary, covering my body. No, that's how she's just spunky as all get out. Well, I've learned a lot from these two people, and I really have through the years. And he had Dawson's funeral, as maybe some of you. By the way, Dawson, after we had this time of eating, I said in the middle of it, Diane, I have something I want to share with you. And he said, a very curious man, and he said, good or bad? Good or bad? And I said, what? Both, maybe. And so he wanted me to give him a hint, and I said, well, why don't we wait till we get back to camp in this part by the water, because all of the major decisions of our life were made by a body of water. A crossroads in our lives, when he asked me to marry him, was by a body of water. So it's just through the years, that's just exactly what we did. And we've had to go to a reservoir sometimes in our own. We have two or three that we could go to then. And so when we got back, I just told him that just what I, you know, that God had spoken to me that he was going to take him home. And his very first word was, when? I don't know. You perhaps will outlive me by 20 years. That's exactly what I said. I just don't. But I got earth deathly quiet. And when I get quiet, my family falls apart. But Dawson says, you know, after we sat there a few minutes in the car, he said, you know, I think you mean it, don't you? And I said, yes. Next, accepting Jesus Christ as my personal Savior and saying yes to you in marriage. I've never been. You know. And so he said, let's do business. So first we went to prayer. And halfway through his prayer, he said, you know, sweetheart, you're right that he is. And I'm not the least bit curious. I have no curiosity whatsoever. None. A package lays there 1 year, and I never wiggle it or touch it or drives my kids up a wall. So when Dawson said to me that he was going to take him home, I said, when? And he says, I don't know. Next afternoon at 20 minutes to 4, Dawson drowned, saving the life of a 21-year-old girl that he had just met in the boat, and he sat between the two that couldn't swim, and he was an expert swimmer. And I went to Scroon Lake from here, 2,400 miles, with three men. And it's the first time I'd ever traveled with just fellows. And the reason being I'd traveled 21,000 miles that year with three sets of girls, three teams from Glenary. I had been in bed, 54 and 55, with tuberculosis, and then Dawson put me on the road the first part of January of 56, because the doctor said I could go on the road again. And it was awfully hard on me to leave Dawson. He could leave me and go on the road, but it was hard for me to leave him. But I did, and he met us all over the United States that those precious months before. And we got home and spent a weekend, he and I, over in Durango area. And that's another story, but I could have been dead today because of he had a gun. He was shooting magpies. And he raised it like this in the car to shoot out my window, and it went off, right like this. And but to see the Lord had a plan for our lives. And the plan for our lives was that I was to walk alone without him, even though we had made all of our plans to work together, and I was going to be traveling with him full time whenever he traveled. But the way you see me today is the very way that I looked and acted when I got the word that he'd fallen out of a boat. In fact, it was a year later when I was told, or some months later, I was told that by the girl that I said this to. She said, I put her in the car when I was going down to where Jack Wurtson was, and Dawson fall out of the boat. And she said, well, it would leave me off here because I'm going to a prayer meeting. And I said, now, who are you going to pray for? And she says, Dawson. I said, Dawson's home in glory. You pray for his family. And she said she couldn't answer me or say a word. And she was so shocked. Never dreamed that he had drowned. And I didn't know at all that I never ever entered my head that Dawson would ever drown. He's an expert swimmer. Never entered my head that that's the way he'd go home. Nor his. If so, we would have talked about it. But he did. We had lots of work to do. Jack cried 30 hours, Jack Wurtson, the first 30 hours after Dawson drowned. So you just forget yourself and pay attention to the one who needs you most. But I just want to share with you women, you don't need dying grace until you're dying. D.L. Moody said that 100 and some years before Dawson drowned. Because there's no place to appropriate and there's no place to store it. And so when you need it, he has abundance with lots left over. He just never runs out. And he has, for every one of you, he has plenty. And he keeps his word. And he certainly has kept his word with me. It hasn't been easy at times. It definitely hasn't. But and I don't want it to be easy. I really don't. I like a let up, of course. Don't we all? And I do have those. Of course I do. But it's been a glory adventure. And that too, it has been an adventure. It's been pure joy and great delight just to walk daily with the one who made me, he made you, he formed you, he called you. And dear girls, he called you by your name. And he says, you're mine. You're mine. And that's just the way I feel. I'm his. And the main thing I want to do and want to be is faithful till God calls me home. At any price.